I'm going to welcome in a colleague of ours who is known for being fleet of foot, Ryan Lavner, who's down there at the starting gate.
Well, Eamon, yesterday was Damon's day for embarrassment. Today is mine. Despite how good I look, folks, I'm not actually a physical specimen. And yet I am here at the gates for the WM Phoenix Open, where Friday, Saturday, folks are going to be lining up at 1, 2 a.m. to try and get through the gates when it opens around 6 a.m. local time. What I'm going to be attempting to do later on in the show is go up about what is a 45-degree angle to the right of number 18 at TPC Scottsdale. That path will then take me around the back hook of 17, straight down what, of course, is that memorable drivable par 4, and then into the grandstand at one of the most famous holes in golf. Keep in mind, folks, for those who are well-trained athletes, this route should take somewhere between 4 and 5 minutes. For a lazy, sloppy, out of shape 38-year-old, I'm expecting this route to take somewhere between 6 and 7 minutes. It's going to be a lot of fun. The running of the bros this time, guys, with just one of them.
The running of the bros. I'm curious, do you have like a Whoop watch? What kind of shoes do you have? How have you prepared for your moment of infamy, lad?
A defibrillator is what he has.
I have not prepared for this whatsoever. I do, of course, have an Apple Watch, which is either going to be charting what will be an outdoor workout, or it's going to be signaling that I'm having a medical emergency, in which case that would be a different story.
Yeah, that watch might be dialing 911 on behalf of our colleague. Great to have Lav. Ready to have some fun on this Tuesday. I was kind of the butt of the joke yesterday, though I you know, rescued my day with that great second shot. But this is a part of what this tournament is all about. Get a little loose. Take some chances. Have some fun.
Exactly. It's not your cookie cutter PGA Tour event. It does have a very distinct identity. Things are a little more loose around here. At times over the years, they've gotten perhaps a little too loose, although the Thunderbirds seem to have put a lid on that over the last couple of years. But it's definitely, it's an energy tournament here. It's a fan engagement tournament out here. And that's what has separated it. And frankly, I would argue with all of these changes going on in the tour in the last few years, with some events clearly elevated and some clearly diminished, that's why this event has been somewhat unimpacted by all of that, because it has forged such a kind of fun identity for itself.
And at the same time, it has a champion identity as well. Look at the field this week. It further, you know, endorses this event when you have the world number one, Scottie Scheffler, who's won here a couple of times. Brooks Koepka making his second start in his return to the PGA Tour.
How you have Colin Morikawa. The first win of Scottie's was actually the first win, period. It's not even date-wise, it's not even 4 years since Scottie Scheffler had his first PGA Tour win, and now we're a lifetime member, 20.
You mentioned Scottie's first PGA Tour win. Should we go back to the year 2022? Do you remember? I mean, there was a little angst about when this guy was going to win for the first time on the PGA Tour, and he did it in style. Third playoff hole against the UCLA Bruin, Patrick Cantlay, birdied four of his final six to win in his 71st career start on tour. That was a nice little story. Yeah, what a nice guy. And then a year later, we started to realize just what a hungry winner he was, defending his title, final round 65, beating Nick Taylor, earning his fifth career win on the PGA Tour, starting to see a pattern, move to number one in the world.
Now, Scottie's first start of 2026, he cruised to a four-shot victory in the American Express. The final round 66 for Scheffler, and that was his 20th victory on the PGA Tour. Here's what he has accomplished since that first win in Phoenix 4 years ago. As we noted, another 19 additional PGA Tour victories, four major championships, two times a Players' Champion, 177 total weeks as the world number one, and he now has the longest active cut streak made of 65. Let's hear from Scottie.
Brooks, I have a memory lane question for you. In 2022, you played the final round of the Phoenix Open with Scottie Scheffler, where he got his first win. Can you think back to that day, please? And is there anything that stands out? Any recollections or anecdotes or memories from that?
I had blonde hair, I think. I think I had blonde hair. I don't know. It's always impressive anytime you play with Scotty. Just being around him, the way he goes about it, him and Ted, they come up with a good game plan. Obviously, Scotty's execution is really, really good. It's impressive how well he's, how long he's been this consistent and played this well, and it's cool to see, right? That's what, well, obviously I've watched a lot of golf and watched a lot of him, and I think that also plays a part in kind of driving this, falling in love with the game again as well.
2022 WM, played with Scotty's first win.
Yeah.
That final round. Can you just talk about your memories of that experience watching him and just going through that round?
Yeah, I joke to everyone that I'll take the credit for really starting Scotty's career. I know he had a lot of great finishes in majors before that, but to get his first win there was huge. And yeah, even back then, he showed a lot of the same composure that he has. And I think he finished like 5 under in the last 7 holes to kind of clip Cantlay there. And it's pretty crazy to see him do what he's doing, because I think a lot of the guys that are similar age to him just kind of see him as another competitor. And he's going on this Tiger-esque run, and he couldn't be nicer. He couldn't be a better guy to be number one in the world. It's so, so impressive. And I think he's become a little bit of the blueprint of, if you're playing well in this day and age, you still can dominate. There's a lot of talk about not being able to dominate to the level of Tiger, and he has a long way to go for sure, but he's really proving that it can still be done. I mean, Rory's right there with him, but what Scotty's doing is unreal.
Scotty Spears, speaking about the world number one, a couple things stand out to me, Eamon. I was watching Scotty tee off on the 11th hole yesterday during his practice round, and the gallery around that tee box was packed. He's not transcendent necessarily like Tiger or Rory, but he does have a legion of fans who are following his every step, even on a Monday practice round. And the other thing that stands out to me is he really enjoys the process. He loves to work. It's not an accident that he is the best player in the world by miles.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see a big gallery follow Scotty around for the simple reason that sports fans in any sport, they enjoy proximity to excellence. You don't get it very often. Yeah. Scotty doesn't show up in everyone's town every year. But when you have the opportunity to see the absolute best, the undisputed best, do what he's doing, you're going to take that opportunity. There is no question who's the best player in the world in this game right now. There hasn't been for a couple of years. And Rory McIlroy had an extraordinary career year last year in terms of winning the Players, winning the Masters. But he's not the best player in the world. And I think that's why you're going to see that crowd follow around Scotty. And I agree with you that he's into the process, but not at the... It doesn't consume him. Mm. And I think that's why he works well here, because Scotty isn't the chest-pumping rah-rah guy. There's definitely an edge to him. And there's passion. You do see him get a little bit fiery on the very rare occasion where shots don't actually go his way. You do see a little bit of fire in him. But he's not going to be suckered in by the atmosphere around here. He strikes me as the kind of guy who can happily tolerate the atmosphere. He's not embracing it. He's not adding to it. He's not really trying to rile up the spectators any more than they are. He's just simply able to navigate his way through these waters, and twice he's come away with the trophy.
Yeah, of course, with that win at the American Express a couple of weeks ago by 4 shots, rounds of 63, 64, 68, 66 on a streak of 16 straight top 10 finishes. And this is someone who I'll never forget when he won the Players' Championship for the first time, you know, had a burger on Sunday night. By Monday, he was already, you know, he won at Bay Hill on Sunday, and on Monday at the Players, he was already there practicing. I mean, the man works hard. As someone who has covered sports for, gosh, 3 decades now, I too am curious and want to be close to, for a first for me, was Steve Young, quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, and wanting to observe his process, and it was work. It wasn't worried about the future. Oh, where do I sit in context with this quarterback or that quarterback? And, you know, Tiger, it was about hard work. And Scotty, they love work. They're up early. They work late. And the things that are written and said don't seem to really affect how they go about their business. Scotty may have the perfect off-the-course life of any athlete that I've ever covered. Everything seems to be in working order, not to mention inside the ropes.
And to me, it's not even what's said about them or what's written about them doesn't matter. It's as though what they actually accomplish doesn't matter. Scotty said something after the win in the American Express that he was asked, you know, how he was going to celebrate. And he basically said, well, you know, I'll just probably head on home and start again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And if you talk to Jack Nicklaus and if you listen to Tiger Woods over the years, they don't spend any time. Even Jack now doesn't spend any time reflecting on past glories. They're not particularly reflective or analytical about what they've accomplished because they're kind of like a shark. What's next? Yeah. Where's the next meal coming from? And I think that's why they've compiled two of the best records in the history of the sport. And I think Scotty Scheffler's very much the same mindset. He's quite happy to accomplish what he accomplishes on a given week. But on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, he's not sitting there wondering where this ranks in his list of accomplishments or figuring out where the trophy's going to go. Yeah. In the overstocked trophy room, he's trying to figure out, well, where's the next one coming from? He's constantly hungry.
Celebrations don't last long. When you're the best player in the world, you're looking for what is next. And for Scotty, this week, a chance to win for the 21st time on the PGA Tour, looking for a third title at the WM Phoenix Open. Some breaking news coming out from the official World Golf ranking moments ago regarding LIV Golf. The OWGR announcing that starting this week, official World Golf ranking points will be allocated at LIV events. In its announcement, it was explained that only the top 10 finishers at LIV events will be given points. This statement now from the OWGR board after conducting an exhaustive and collaborative process and in an effort to reflect the changing landscape of the men's professional game, the OWGR board has made the decision to award ranking points to LIV Golf events for the 2026 season. Ranking points will be allocated to the top 10 finishers in LIV's individual stroke play events, which recognizes there are a number of areas where LIV does not meet the eligibility standards set out by the OWGR. LIV events will be ranked based on OWGR's standard classification of small field tournaments, with a further virtual cut applied to award points to players who finish in the top 10. Players who finish lower than 10th will not receive OWGR points, and those points will not be redistributed to the players finishing 10th or higher. The PGA Tour releasing a statement, we respect today's decision by the official World Golf Ranking Governing Board and the considerable time the board and Chairman Immelman committed to this process. That, of course, referring to former Masters champ Trevor Immelman. For more on this breaking news, we bring in senior writer Rex Hoggard. Rex, what should we know about this latest development?
Damon, I think first and foremost, you have to look at this as a compromise. Speaking with Trevor Immelman late last year in December at the PNC Championship, he pointed out how intensive this has actually been throughout the entire process. This started last July at the Scottish Open. That's when LIV Golf reapplied for world ranking points. And I think the ongoing dialogue has been intense. Actually, in that press release you just read, it's complex, very complex is what Trevor Immelman said. And this is very much a compromise. Clearly, LIV Golf probably isn't happy with the idea that they are the only tour that gets world ranking points that are limited to the top 10. But the other half of it is, as you pointed out, promotion and relegation is still an issue for the board when they voted on this. Now, a couple of things to point out. It was a unanimous vote. It's important to point out that the PGA Tour and DP World Tour both have representatives on that board. So it's fair to say this is a compromise across the board.
Rex, when we're talking about why the compromise was necessary, we're really focused in on things, right? Like the fact that there's no field variance out there. It's the same 57 guys every week. And we've seen at the end of last season, we saw one guy lose his job when he'd actually finished higher than four guys who actually didn't lose their job out there. It's not a meritocracy in the sense of playing your way into it. It's very much a by invitation only league. And that's something that the OWGR is going to find a tough time to actually assign them any kind of full value of points when there are compromising aspects of it like that.
And if you look back at the original bid, which was in 2023, Eamon, the idea that promotion and relegation was an issue because you only had so many spots coming from the promotions event and the international series. Those spots have just increased by one. Now, it's not as though LIV Golf has seriously changed their criteria, opened the doors, or made promotion and relegation any more clear. As you pointed out, it's probably become a lot more muddy after last year because of some of the movement that you saw of those guys who were in the lock zone and those who were in the open zone getting passed over. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. Again, it seems to me Trevor Immelman was trying to come up with some sort of compromise, and this was the best they could do, and that Scott O'Neill and that Liv Goff are going to take a small victory.
Rec's been doing a little bit of math, and the world ranking points are projected for Liv to be about 23. That's less than the PGA Tour opposite field events of 25, less than 37 for fall events, less than half of the 66 of signature events, 59, of course, given out this week at the WM Phoenix Open. If you are a Liv golfer this morning, what do you think their reaction would be to the amount of points given? They wanted points, but it's not like this is a lion's share of world ranking points.
You would have to have a pretty good season, a really good season, I would say, to gain any traction at all in the world golf rankings. You look at Joaquin Niemann, what he was able to do last year, winning five times, one other top 10 finish. Clearly, he would be much higher in the world ranking right now. John Rahm, another player, he finished inside the top 10 and 12 of his 13 starts. Those two players would clearly be much better off right now with world ranking points. But for anyone else, it's going to be a tough climb. And you also pointed out, these fields are getting so few points right now. You just compare it to last week. Justin Rose walked away from the Farmers Insurance Open with 56 points. So it's not as though this is going to be a windfall. And I think players on that side are probably going to have to wrap their mind around. There is one other element here. I know those world ranking points in this discussion came up last month when most of the players on Liv were in South Florida for their different media days. And I was told that Scott O'Neill was very confident that they were going to get points. My guess is he didn't anticipate this.
Another week in professional golf, another week of breaking news. Rex Hargrove reporting for us on this Tuesday. And you'll recall early in the days of Liv, one of the questions, Eamon, was, well, will they get official world golf ranking points? They are getting them now, but at what cost?
Yeah, it's unsurprising, the decision, and it seems a fairly equitable solution because the statement from the OWGR does recognize that there are compromising aspects to this. And I've always argued that if Liv met the criteria that others are applied to, then they ought to get world ranking points. But that's never what Liv attempted to do. Greg Norman promised players Liv ranking points when they went there. That was not Greg Norman's gift to give them. So whenever the World Golf Ranking refused to allow its process to be short-circuited by Greg Norman, Greg threw all of his toys out of the pram and stormed off and withdrew his application, which put their process back a couple of years. What they are getting now is probably a fair reflection of what the tour is, because you do have the same 57 guys coming in and out all the time. You have players who are contractually exempt from being relegated, no matter how poorly they play out there. So those are difficult things for the World Golf Ranking to kind of work their way around. But the reality is, it is not a meritocracy. It is by invitation. The player executives at Liv will determine who plays on Liv, not the performance of the players on Liv at all. It remains a compromised product. And we're going to probably see now that some of the people who've spent the last 4 years complaining that the World Golf Ranking is obsolete, that it's corrupt, that it's meaningless, will now think, oh, well, this isn't such a bad thing after all. But the reality has not changed. Liv is an abject failure, not because it didn't have world ranking points. And giving Liv world ranking points will not make it any less of an abject failure.
Well, as this news has been rumored to come down over the last couple of days, a number of Liv golfers have been speaking about the potential of receiving world golf ranking points, and also more specifically, the changes to the Liv golf format. And none may be bigger voice than the two-time U.S. Open champ, Bryson DeChambeau, and he was talking about the change of the format from 54 to 72 holes. It's definitely changed away from what we had initially been told it was going to be. So there is some movement that we've all been, I would say, interested in, and going, why that movement? Because we were told it was going to be this, as in 54 holes. So that's definitely made us have some different thoughts about it. I've got a contract for this year, and we'll go through it there and see what happens after that. Look, it's 72 holes, it's changed, but we're still excited to play professionally and play for what we're doing and go across the world. I think it's going to be great for our team. Is it what we ultimately signed up for? No. So I think we're supposed to be different, so I'm a little indifferent to it right now. Hopefully it weighs positively on me over the course of time, but you never know. I'm not sure. We didn't sign up to play for 72 holes. Paul Casey, the Englishman, I'm right there with everyone. It wouldn't have been the thing I would have changed. I would have maybe gone tee times rather than the shotgun start, or something else would have changed. 2010 Open champion Louis Oosthuizen of South Africa. I'm a big fan of the 54 holes. To me, it was a bit more unique, and I felt a lot more fresh in the tournaments and ready to play. We do a lot of traveling, which will make it a little bit more difficult to play 72 hole events. So you get this news of the official world golf ranking points, maybe not as many as some would have hoped for. You have the defections of Brooks Koepka back to the PGA Tour, the news that Patrick Reed is coming. Players who had left initially talking about wanting to spend more time with family and leaving LIV Golf saying they want to spend more time with family. Then you have these quotes about the changes in the format. It does seem like a precarious time for a tour that in the United States anyway has not been able to find its footing.
Yeah, when you hear Bryson say, well, we didn't sign up for 72 holes. Well, in a way, he's right about that. But what you signed up for was to put up and shut up. This is not a democracy at LIV. You choose to go work for an agency of an authoritarian government. You signed up and you signed away all of your rights. This is the whim of one man. Yasser Al-Rumayyan will determine what LIV is, what the format is, what any prospect of a deal outside of his own ecosystem is. He decided when it started. He will decide solo when it ends. So these players can express their opinions, but they signed away all of their rights for that money over the last few years. So I don't think Yasser really gives a darn what any of them think about anything, because they are chattel. They are not actually assets of LIV. They will do as they're told.
Yeah, Yasser is the chairman of the public investment fund, but I think that Bryson DeChambeau is the kingmaker. He's LeBron James as free agent come end of 2026. And what he does, I think it could either give LIV Golf one last chance of transcendent legitimacy, or it could be a death knell should he follow Brooks Koepka and Patrick Reed back to the PGA Tour. He is social media savvy, millions of followers across various platforms. He's known out here from these fans. He's known by my 14-year-old teenage sons. I mean, he is known around the world. And to hear his quotes doesn't sound like someone who's very enthusiastic about 2026, at least reading in black and white.
No, and the flip side of that is John Rahm, who's also a huge asset for LIV. He's very much advocated in public that they should go to 72 holes because he thought it was a better competition. It was better preparation for major championships. So if you're Scott O'Neill, their CEO, or Yasser Al-Rumayyan, it's very difficult to bridge the gap between what your two biggest stars actually think this league ought to be in terms of its format out there. But the ultimate reality is Bryson is an enormous name for LIV, but the audience didn't follow Bryson to LIV. And it's not a platform for Bryson. Bryson's platform is YouTube. He is successful in spite of being on LIV, not because he's on LIV, because he doesn't have a platform that the audience actually watches him on. I mean, their tournament schedule is almost confidential. You can't actually find it, and not many people are actually watching it. So I don't think it's decisive one way or the other, any more than Brooks Koepka leaving is decisive. LIV's future will ultimately be decided when Yasser Al-Rumayyan either loses interest or is finally told, stop spending money on this folly. You've got so much in the hole, there's no prospect of a return. So losing Bryson, I think, yeah, it weakens it, but it's already compromised beyond any kind of return at this point. It's the death blow comes when Yasser pulls the plug, not when Bryson decides where he'd rather play.
Thoughts on the PGA Tour statement? Short, sweet, to the point.
I think if you had this conversation 2 years ago, the PGA Tour statement would probably have been a lot more complicated, a lot more convoluted. To me, it just shows the absolute disinterest in LIV, that LIV has ceased to be something that they even think about. It's not a threat to them now in the way that it was perceived to be a threat a couple of years ago. The PGA Tour clearly believes it has its own momentum. They've had two LIV guys flip back in the last few weeks. They don't see any of their guys flipping the other way at this point. So I think that the tour just sees it as sort of a courtesy to Trevor Immelman to acknowledge the work that he and the committee have put into this, but it's entirely irrelevant to the PGA Tour's business. That's how I would read their statement.
Yeah, big news nonetheless in professional golf. LIV Golf being awarded official World Golf Ranking points. We'll see how consequential that news is in the weeks and months to come. Well, PGA Tour's best are here in the Valley of the Sun. Day two, this Tuesday, practice rounds, mayhem at 16. What a gorgeous day in Scottsdale. Back on Golf Today. We're live on site this week at TPC Scottsdale as WM continues to be the title sponsor of the Phoenix Open. Award-winning tournament, been recognized for its excellence across all aspects from fan and player experience to charitable impact, title sponsor integration. Last year was named the PGA Tour's Event of the Year, and John Morris is the president and COO of WM and joins us now. Great to see you, Rutgers grad from the great state of New Jersey. How'd you end up at WM?
I started in the garbage business as a kid on the back of a truck in New Jersey by accident. And here I am a lot of years later, really lucky to be here.
No doubt. And you were named president last year in May. How would you describe your vision for the company?
Well, I think, you know, I've been with the company almost my whole entire professional life. So yeah. I've sort of grown up in the business. First and foremost, you know, we got 62,000 associates that work for WM. So job number one is making sure we keep them safe every day, give them the tools and training they need to do the jobs, service our customers, run the business well. And then a lot of the role now, Damon, is really around how do we innovate the business? How do we modernize the business? I mean, we put 20,000 trucks on the street every day. So we're a big logistics company, if you think about it that way. We've got 1,500 operating locations. So we're a material management company. So we do a lot on the processing side. You think about our sustainability platform. We're the biggest recycler in North America. So there's a lot that goes into the WM platform.
And part of your business is this week. WM's been a title sponsor since 2010. You've been with the company every year since. Why is this week so important to what you do?
Well, I think it does a few things for us. One, and I talk about our 62,000 employees, you know, and WM is sort of a symphony, right? Those 62,000 people pull off every day all over the country. I would tell you, this is a great platform for that. What our team does here is the same thing. It's a show of the capabilities of the company, not just as an operating business, but also what's possible from a sustainability platform. It's a great place for us to really demonstrate what the company's all about from all facets.
I know one of the goals is recycling, and every piece of trash is either disposed of or recycled. That's a huge part of the mission. There's also a golf tournament, one of the more popular events on the PGA Tour. Are you able to kind of put that hat on at any point this week and be a fan and say, hey, where's Scotty? Where's Jordan Spieth?
We get a little bit of a chance to do that. Sunday's actually the best day for that because we're busy making sure that this gets pulled off the right way. Okay. And that's job number one. But on Sunday, we get to watch a little golf and we'll hand a check out to some lucky person on Sunday.
How about just the environment and the vibe here? Why does it work for you? The party atmosphere. I mean, let's be honest. There are fans here that may not know golf that well. They wouldn't know, you know, Jordan Spieth from Michael Jordan. They just don't know. They're just here to kind of hang and, oh, there's a golf ball in the air.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, from the first year to now, you've really seen the evolution and you've been in the business a while. You've seen how it's evolved. I think it's really interesting because it's certainly the game of golf and the tradition of golf mixed with entertainment, right? And I think that's one of the things that makes this so unique. Being out in the desert, Super Bowl week, I mean, it really has lined up really well for us. And you can see by the tens of thousands of folks that are out here every day.
These guys compete. You compete in business. How would you describe your vision for the future? It's a fast-changing world. AI is the big buzzword. What are you most excited about when you look forward?
You know, I would tell you, it's interesting. People don't usually think of WM as a technology leader. But the reality is that we've got facets of technology that are permeating all parts of the business. I talked about 20,000 trucks around the road every day.
Yeah.
What we do from a recycling standpoint and how we've taken artificial intelligence and other forms of technology to really enable our employees to do their jobs more efficiently, better, safer. That's the fun part of the job. I mean, I love the company. I've been there my whole career. But I think from an innovation standpoint, modernizing our business model, using technology to enable our employees, that's the stuff that's really exciting.
I can tell we've enjoyed our association with WM. Love coming here year after year to our perch here on 16. Have fun, John. Thank you so much for having us and for the time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, John Morris, president and COO of WM. You see the beautiful yellow and green signs all over this beautiful property at TPC Scottsdale. Now we're joined by Gabby Herzig of The Athletic. Always great to visit with you here at TPC Scottsdale. Your reaction to the LIV Golf receiving official World Golf ranking points today?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Eamon and Damon. It's a pleasure. You know, we expected this news, I think, to come at some point this week. It's certainly not surprising. I think the OWGR board has been working on this for a while and has been open about the fact that they have to evaluate LIV for what it is. It's a unique format, the team competition, no cut, now 72 hole events, but there are certainly things they had to weigh back and forth. I think, you know, LIV itself and the players involved will be very interested to see, you know, how this trickles down and affects them in terms of getting into majors. Obviously, one of the biggest things that LIV had promised its players from the get-go was official world golf ranking points at some point or another. And I wonder if players will be actually satisfied with what they got today. I can sense that maybe it's not quite what they wanted, and it's going to take some serious time for players to work their way into majors with only the top 10 getting awarded points, as we saw earlier in the statement. So my reaction is that it's kind of good news, bad news for LIV Golf. You know, at this stage, is it really something to celebrate, or are you looking back 2-3 years, you know, why did this happen sooner?
I'm curious if you think it actually makes a difference in the grand scheme of things, Gabby, because obviously it matters to the players, it will matter to the executives, but fans don't watch or not watch on the basis of whether or not ranking points are accorded to those in the competition. This isn't the reason why LIV has struggled as a product. It's hard to imagine that it's going to be the reason why LIV would kind of be elevated as a product. Is it really impactful at all, I guess, is the question.
Absolutely. I honestly don't think it'll be as impactful as we think it will be in terms of elevating LIV as a product. But where I do think it'll make an impact is how players are feeling about LIV Golf itself. You know, as we've seen, Brooks Koepka is back on the PGA Tour. Patrick Reed has left LIV Golf and is making his way back onto the PGA Tour eventually. And will this kind of spark more thoughts among players of, you know, maybe LIV hasn't promised me everything that I wanted, and is there a reason to look elsewhere? So that's, I think, where the biggest impact will be for LIV.
January's been a busy month. February starting off to be pretty busy. Just as a journalist and writer, what's it been like for you these past 5-6 weeks covering these fast-changing stories?
Every day is a different journey, yeah. Damon. It's been really a fast-paced, moving situation. I think that's kind of the most remarkable thing that people might not realize behind the scenes. These decisions are being made very quickly. Although the PGA Tour might have prepared behind the scenes for the eventual prospect of a player like Brooks Koepka wanting to come back, I do think it was a really rapid choice made by Brian Rolapp and his team over at PGA Tour HQ to make this pathway and give someone like Brooks a direct route back to the PGA Tour. So covering it as a journalist has been kind of an everyday situation, evaluating, you know, what are the most important storylines, who to talk to, who knows what, and just as you know, what happened today with the OWGR, it's one of those revolving situations, and now we'll just have to see what the reaction is from the players as well.
Let's talk about this week, which also tends to have a lot of varying storylines out here. The tour now has private investors. They look at what works, what drives revenue. This is a tournament that works. It's worked for a very long time in terms of it's the peak of fan engagement out here. It's a little more raucous, or a lot more raucous, than almost any other PGA Tour event. Is this a portable model, though, for the PGA Tour? Could an investor look at this and say, well, we can do this at the Travelers in Connecticut, or we can do it at Fort Worth at Colonial?
I don't think so, Damon. I think this is a one-off event. Nowhere else in the country also has the landscape of this tournament. Looking out at the desert vistas, I think, is something that makes it really unique. And just the sheer mass of this event, too, people don't realize how many fans are actually out here every single day. They actually don't release the numbers, and it's always kind of this ongoing mystery. But to fill a stadium like this, to fill the rest of the golf course, is a really difficult thing to do. And I think we should kind of celebrate this tournament for what it is. You know, leave it alone. The PGA Tour is talking a lot right now about scarcity. And I think that having this tournament as, you know, the one you mark this date on your calendar as this is the crazy one is the best thing possible for it and for people looking forward to it.
One of the PGA Tour's new ad campaigns, Where the Best Belong, used Brooks Koepka's image in a commercial that aired during the Farmers Insurance Open. He makes his second start as a PGA Tour returnee this week here in the Valley of the Sun. What fascinates you the most about covering him specifically last week as he moves forward to this week?
Absolutely. I think, you know, clearly this is an adjustment period for Brooks Koepka. He didn't play as well as he would have liked to last week, made the cut, but really struggled with the putter. So I mean, it's fascinating to see how he's going to clean up his game and how all the outside noise is going to impact that. But I also think it's pretty fascinating from a business perspective of how the PGA Tour is treating his arrival. You know, there was a lot of promotional content about Brooks Koepka last week, a lot of social media posts. It's almost as if, you know, you took this deal, you're coming back to the PGA Tour, we're going to promote you and you're going to like it. And I think it's actually super interesting to see how they're treating that with Rolap and Command. I think that's a lot from it has a lot to do with him being in that seat.
Yeah, he was very artfully weaponized by the tour last week in terms of the media. I'm curious if you think, obviously there are different criteria applied to Patrick Reed returning later this year than to Brooks Koepka. I'm curious if you find from a fan basis or from the other players, are they each getting the same warm welcome back? Was the news received as warmly in both cases? Because I sense that Reed's somewhat a more complicated character as far as players out here on the PGA Tour go. Plus, they're not going to see him for another 8 months.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's going to be a totally different story with Patrick Reed. As we all know, he's dealt with his fair share of controversies over the years. Certainly players feel a certain way about that. I think it definitely is going to help that there's this buffer period of that year where he can actually play. He'll be over in Europe playing on the DP World Tour. Whereas Brooks has always kind of maintained that relationship with PGA Tour players. You see him kind of friendly with other players at the majors, playing practice rounds at the Masters with Rory.
Helps that he lives in Jupiter as well.
Helps that he lives in the thick of it. So I think it will be a very different reception between the two of them, but as fans have noted over the past few weeks, Patrick Reed brings such a unique element to the PGA Tour, kind of this villain character, and he is always so entertaining in that manner. So I think a lot of people will be equally as excited about it.
Brian Rolap's stewardship of the PGA Tour has been eventful over this past nearly a year now. We're not quite there. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned the word scarcity. There's been a talk that potentially the PGA Tour schedule sliding later in the year to allow football to finish and then starting the PGA Tour. And some would argue, well, golf is different, that it's not going to be that 17-week NFL type of sport. Can you see the PGA Tour working in a condensed schedule where scarcity is a true part of the schedule?
Yeah, I think that's a valid point about, you know, golf is just different from team sports in that manner, but also the media landscape has been changing so much over the past few years. I think scarcity is becoming even more important than it ever was. You know, it's an attention economy out there. We're being pulled left and right. Our eyeballs are, do we go to TikTok? Do we go to Instagram? Are we watching YouTube? And so I think golf has to do everything in its power to make it, you know, that product and that event that you need to sit down on your couch and watch, and maybe limiting the schedule to, you know, 20 events or whatever the PGA Tour is planning right now behind the scenes would help in that effort.
Speaking of how schedules can complicate even the best intentions, take a look at the LPGA Tour. Nelly Korda wins at the weekend without hitting a shot on Sunday. We're not going to see Nelly again until mid-March. The LPGA Tour is off for another few weeks, then it returns for a several week swing through Asia. What did you make of that fiasco over the weekend in terms of the decisions that were made, the way the decisions were communicated? Because you do have an absolute star winning on the LPGA Tour, but no one's talking about that. People are talking about the circumstances in which she didn't actually hit a shot on Sunday.
Yeah, it's definitely a disappointment. I would say from everyone that I've talked to about the situation, including LPGA Tour players, it's just not what you want from a professional golf organization. There were so many, you know, parts of that situation that were mishandled.
And there you see the conditions that caused the cancellation.
Yeah, exactly.
On Saturday. So it was unfair to players then, certainly. I guess the question, Gabby, is was it still equally unfair, or was it just simply cold on Sunday? Because the decisions don't seem to have been communicated very clearly.
No, absolutely. And I think the main issue is, you know, whatever the conditions were, it wasn't explained properly, the decision-making. There was no foresight as to whether the players could have played on Monday. Yeah. It's just kind of the lack of professionalism, I think, is what bothered a lot of people. And the LPGA has so much momentum right now in terms of, you know, Craig Kessler coming in as the new commissioner.
That was the surprising part, wasn't it? Because
exactly.
He's been so on top of everything.
Yes.
And then he was nowhere to be seen on Sunday. To me, that was the most surprising part of all of it.
Agreed. And I think, you know, players are feeling that right now. You know, we're supposed to be kind of this new LPGA,
right?
You know, new governance, new people in charge. And it seemed like it was kind of just taking a few steps backwards instead. Yeah.
Before we let you go, as you were answering that question, I noticed you looking over at 16. We do the same. I hit a couple shots here yesterday. Have you played this hole in your time?
She's laughing at your shots, Damon.
I was really entertained by that yesterday.
Well,
I will say that was good TV.
Vehicle.
It was
the first one or the second one?
Both.
Thank you.
That's the PR answer.
Should we take you back, Gabby? I mean, you know what it's like. You play this game at a high level.
Yeah. I've been sitting. Sick. I mean, give us a review of the
for
first
2 hours and say, yeah, go hit a 9-iron in front of the watching world.
You know, I'd say you probably hit a little bit too far behind the ball, Damon.
Yes, but how about the second?
But no, it's tough out here. I mean, the mental game, as we know, is one of the toughest parts of this sport, and
my greatest strength.
The comeback arc that we saw there with you, Damon, was truly aspirational.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, before we let you go, real quick, how do you write the world number one differently week to week? Because he's just doing it every single week, nearly 16 straight top 10 finishes.
It's really hard. It's really hard to come up with new material on Scottie Scheffler. I think, you know, as I go out there and watch him, you know, round to round, I always just try to be especially observant of if he's doing something differently. But the remarkable thing about Scotty is he sticks to his routine so well. It's almost robotic. You know, the amount of looks he takes at the hole before he swings, you know, down to his practice regimen on the range with his coach Randy Smith and Ted Scott. It's all such a beautiful kind of dance that he does. And then you look at his footwork and it's going all over the place. So that's a little bit different. But no, it's definitely difficult to come up with kind of compelling ways to talk about Scottie Scheffler. But at the same time, just the sheer fact that he's doing what he's doing is remarkable, and anyone will read about that. So it's an easy job for us in that way.
We invite our viewers to read you in The Athletic. Gabby Herzig, one of the best in the business. We
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your annual visit to our set. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Great to have Gabby with us on this Tuesday.
Welcome back to Golf Today. We're live and on-site all week at TPC Scottsdale for the biggest party in golf, the WM Phoenix Open. We'll have live first-round coverage this Thursday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. Now, the Thunderbirds serve as hosts of the WM Phoenix Open and work to serve the local community here in Arizona. Millions of dollars of Phoenix Open proceeds have been spent to benefit hundreds of organizations and individuals, including Special Olympics, Boys and Girls Clubs of Scottsdale, and the local agencies of the United Way.
Jason Eisenberg was appointed as the tournament chairman. The 2026 edition of the WM Phoenix Open served as assistant tournament chairman. Last year, president of the Eisenberg Company, commercial real estate firm, and a native of the Valley of the Sun, and joins us here on our perch at 16. Jason, word on the street is you used to be like an elementary school kid tumbling down the hills here at TPC Scottsdale. Is that true? Did you kind of grow up going here?
Absolutely. I grew up born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, so it's surreal to be the tournament chairman this year. But yeah, I grew up when none of this was built out here and 20, 30 years ago coming to this event. So super excited to be here.
Nice.
Jason, the tournament chairman's a rotating role every year. At what point did it start taking over your life? Because that seems to be the theme from guys who have this job every year.
Yeah, it's quite an endeavor. When the last putt dropped in 2025, that's where I took the reins and started taking control. Really, from there, it's just ramped up ever since. I mean, we have the build starting in September. That's really when you kind of sink your teeth into it and see what this event's going to be. So it comes in waves, but it's definitely when that last putt drops.
1 year term, that's less than the House of Representatives. So how do you leave your mark on the 2026 edition?
You really got to start when you become the assistant tournament chairman. So All the visions that you have really have to start that year. You're a tournament chairman, you're just implementing what you want to do. So this new structure we're in at 16, that really started last year when I was the assistant tournament chairman. So, you know, you get as much as you can in, and at some point you just got to kind of let it go and see where it goes from there.
Tell us what is new with the structure here at 16.
It's a brand new structure. You guys have been coming here. Before it was very low ceiling, scrim everywhere. We got rid of half the columns. It became a structural aluminum structure. The glass railings. We have the pin high club, which is kind of right behind us. Which is a four-story portion of the structure. So really top to bottom, we revamped the entire 16 hole.
We can see the aerial shot of 16 here as we come in on the drone view just to show the absolute expansiveness of this facility here. No wonder it's the loudest hole in golf.
It's incredible. There's nothing like it.
How about the floor seating option to the left of 16? Why was that important? I mean, I kind of want to head down there myself.
You got to go check it out. Okay. It's the coolest seat in the house. It's the Pin High Club. It's brand new this year.
Yeah.
You're literally 25 feet off the green. If we get a hole in one and the general admission stands erupt, it's going to be it's going to be like nothing else.
The tournament has in the past had some criticism for fan behavior issues. The last couple of years, that seems to have not been an issue. Is that a constant monitoring thing for the Thunderbirds? And what changes have you made to make sure you don't ever get in the situation that you have been in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. We want the fan experience to be unbelievable. We also want the player experience to be unbelievable. So we've made a lot of measures in place to really control the fans, to make sure that the drinking stays at an appropriate level. We have PD and we have Thunderbirds walking with player groups to make sure that the crowds can get loud, the crowds can have a ton of fun. We just want to make sure that they stay appropriate.
Jason, the build-out here is unreal, and throughout the back nine, really. I'm curious, you know, the front nine might be a little jealous. Do you see any opportunities to build out the front nine and make this place, I mean, it's already popping, but to make it really pop?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The back nine's jammed. I don't know if we could fit any more out here. The front nine, as we look at kind of how do we make this tournament a little bigger, a little better year over year over year, the front nine's definitely where that needs to take place. I mean, there's some great par threes out there. Your proximity to the Princess and that entrance over there just kind of makes that prime real estate.
Cool. You do have signage up around the course, Jason, that speaks to the scale of the charity dollars that have been raised here over the years. There are so many coming changes in the PGA Tour, some speculation of events that might continue, events that may not. Are you in any way concerned that the charity part of that DNA might get squeezed and you have to try to figure out a different way to do what you do?
You know, it's absolutely a concern. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a charity event, and the reason we do all this is to give money back to charity. So, you know, as we have our conversations with the PGA, you know, we're hoping that we can maintain the ability to continue to raise our money, continue to raise our commitment to this community. Because I think the reason you've seen this event grow the way you have is because of what we do in the community. You know, it's we support the community, and in turn, the community supports us by showing up.
Why'd you want this job?
Wants an interesting perspective there. You know, I had a lot of different jobs within this organization. I did parking. I ran Bay Club. I did sales and marketing. I kind of saw a lot of the ins and outs. So I think it was just kind of a natural progression for me to take this seat.
Nice.
Is this a portable experience in your mind, Jason? Because obviously, we just had Gabby Herzig here from The Athletic, and we're talking about the idea of how the tour's investors would look at something that works and really is the barometer of fan engagement on the PGA Tour, and might start to wonder, can they do this in other towns and other tournaments? It doesn't seem to me to be that portable an exercise.
It's a good question. I don't think it really is that portable. I mean, elements of it are, but you got to remember, this is the fifth oldest tournament on tour, right? I mean, we've had a lot of time to put this together. You know, this wasn't built in a day. This is the evolution of decades worth of work continuing to grow this deal. So, you know, I don't know how portable it is. It's also in one of the greatest cities in the country. You know, I mean, we've had great growth. We have great weather. We have kind of the perfect storm of elements that have led to the success of this event.
One of the great traditions here in the desert, of course, the fans, 6:30 in the morning, running from the entrance to find their seat here at 16. Our colleague Ryan Lavner is about to recreate that run. He's younger than we are, so I'm not worried about him pulling a hamstring. But any advice for Ryan as he kind of stretches out, ready to run?
Presumably you've done that yourself.
I've never done the run. I've seen the run a bunch. I've walked it a bunch. I think people way underestimate how long of a run it is. They come out of the chutes too hot. They're sprinting. It's about a mile and a half. So unless you're a trained athlete, it's a hike. So pace yourself.
Terrific advice, Jason. We appreciate you coming up to our perch. Thanks for having us. Should be a great week.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always great to see you guys.